in Nimbarka today. It's a very interesting story. So, Om Ganat Timadandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, he appeared in Andhra Pradesh, which is in southern India, in a Brahminical family. His father's name was Aruna Muni, and his mother's name was Jayanti Devi. And he was sent to Gurukula, the Rishikula, which is Gurukula. And he became very, very educated in the scriptures in a very, very short time. And the reason he's called Nimbarka Acharya, because Nim means the Nim tree, Arka means like the sun, was what happened is when he was in the ashram, Lord Brahma came to visit him in the guise of a sannyasi. And Lord Brahma came at the time of sunset, just before sunset. And then Lord Brahma was asking for some prasadam. But there was no food. And then, technically speaking, a sannyasi is not supposed to eat at the time of the sunset. So Nimbarkacharya's mother didn't know what to do. She thought, you know, how are we going to feed the sannyasi? She said, well, there's nothing. You got to go away. But Nimbarka was actually very upset. He said, how can you violate this titi dharma? That means the dharma of receiving guests who haven't been invited. And the mother said, you know, there's nothing to give him. What can we do? And Nimbarka said, all right, I'll bring something very quickly. But in the meantime, I guarantee that the sun will not set. And so how he did that was that he took Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra and put it up in a tree. In a Nim tree, a Nim Arka. And then the sun didn't set because it was very bright. And so Lord Brahma gave him the name Nimbarka because of that. Lord Brahma was in the guise of a sannyasi, as I mentioned before. He taught his disciples the sacred Gopal mantra of 18 letters. We also get the Gopal mantra too. And Nimbarka's disciplic succession is most prominent in Vrindavan, Nandagram, Varshana, Govardhan, and Nimgram, which are all in Braj. And he taught the Dvaita Advaita philosophy. In other words, it's very similar to Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. Dvaita Advaita. That means Dvaita means duality, Advaita means oneness. So he taught them how that they were both compatible. And he wrote many literatures, commentaries on the Brahma Sutras and other books. And that's Nimbarkacharya, because I wanted to get onto the story of Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha. I'm surprised that not many more devotees came to worship Tulsi this morning, because there's a special benediction you get from worshiping Tulsi during Tulsi Puja on this particular day. So those of you who missed the opportunity, too bad. So I took advantage. So here's the story of the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha. It's quite a complicated story, so try to pay attention. You may not remember all the details, but... So here's how it goes. Once upon a time, Narada Muni asked Narayan, how did Tulsi become your wife, and where was she born? Who is she, and why is she a tree? So Narayan Uvacha. So he begins the story. He says there's a descendant of Manu, and his name was Vrishadvaja. He was a fanatic devotee of Lord Shiva. And this Vrishadvaja stopped worship of Lord Narayan and other demigods, and then Surya became very angry and cursed him to lose all his wealth. And Shiva got very angry. He fired his trident at Surya. It's an interesting story. You probably haven't heard this one before. And then the sun god, Surya, went to Brahmaloka with Kashyapa to complain about the whole thing. And then he went to Vaikuntha to complain to Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan said, all right, I bless you with fearlessness. And then Lord Shiva arrived, you know, in the gateways of Vaikuntha, and then he became peaceful. And he explained everything to Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan explained, because of the time factor, don't worry, Vrishadvaja is now dead, because, you know, you're up here in the spiritual world, and the comparative time factor is, you know, it's different. Different, like one instant in the spiritual world is like billions, trillions, quadrillions, you know, cycles of Lord Brahma in the material world. So don't worry, Bishop Dwaja is dead. His son is also dead. He has two grandsons, Dharmadwaja and Kushadwaja, who are now worshiping Lakshmi. They had some problems before, didn't have enough money. But now they're worshiping Lakshmi, and they are Vaishnavas. And so they both performed austerities. And Dharmadwaja and Madhavi, his wife, gave birth to the expansion of Lakshmi after 100 celestial years, and that was Tulsi Devi. Tulsi Devi is considered an expansion of Lakshmi. And she was very beautiful. She had lotus flower imprint on her foot. Her eyes were like lotuses. Her lips were like bimba. Bimba means like reddish. Like nowadays, the ladies put lipstick on their lips to make them reddish. Actually, they put green sometimes. Palms, her soles were red, her navel was deep, she had three folds, and she had a halo and white complexion like a champaka flower. So that was Tulsi, that's describing Tulsi Devi. It's interesting. Have you heard this before? Anyway, some new information. This is all from the Padma Purana. I take notes from the Padma Purana. So then Tulsi, of course, she wanted to get Krishna as her husband. She wasn't satisfied with any just old bloke. So she went to Badrinath to perform austerities to get Krishna as her husband. She was there for 100,000 celestial years. For 20,000 years, she just ate fruits and water. 30,000, she just ate dry leaves. No quinoa. 40,000, air. 10,000 years, nothing. And she was standing on one leg. So people sometimes say, you know, austerities are just meant for men, you know, just men could be gurus. But here you find someone much more austere than even Hiranyakashipu. And so she asked Brahma for a boon. She explained that in the past she was a gopi, a partial expansion of Radha, and Krishna got intimate with her, and Radha got angry, and Krishna said, you should take birth, you're going to take birth in India and marry Narayan. And Brahma replied, but you will marry Shankachuda first, who was Sudam, because he was attracted to you in Goloka, and you were both what's called Jati Smarana. You both can remember your past births or past lives in the spiritual world. Sudam performed austerities to get you as a wife. Later on, you'll get married to Narayan. You will curse him, and he will curse you. And you will be the Tulsi plant, Vrindavani. And Tulsi asked Lord Brahma, I want to lose my fear of Srimati Radharani, because she was cursed by Srimati Radharani. So Brahma initiated Tulsi in a 16-letter Radha mantra. And in this way, he said, you will become dear to Radharani, and she will approve your association with Krishna. So Tulsi worshipped Radharani for 12 years. Then, during that time, Kamadeva, remember, this is a pastime. This is not really like the Kamadeva of this world where you fall in love with some creepy stool body. So Kamadeva affected her. You know, it's Yogamaya. And she saw Shankachuda in her dreams. So she hadn't met Shankachuda at that time, so she saw Shankachuda in her dreams. And she was crying. So here's the story of Shankachuda's birth. Once upon a time, Kashyapa and Danu, who is the mother of the Danavas, had a son named Vrupachitti. His son was Damba, who was a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Damba went to Pushkara forest and did austerities for 100,000 years, chanting Hare Krishna, and effulgence came from his head. All the demigods were worried and went to Vaikuntha, and they were assured by Vishnu. Vishnu went to Damba. He said, what blessings do you want? To have a son, he said, Damba said, to have an invincible son, to be your devotee, conquer everyone. So the wife of Damba then became pregnant, and that was Sudam, who was Shankachuda. So that's Shankachuda's birth right there. And Shankachuda performed austerities, and Lord Brahma appeared to him and said, you will be invincible to the demigods. In other words, the demigods won't be able to conquer you. And you'll marry Tulsi. And so Lord Brahma benedicted him in this way and gave them an amulet of Sri Krishna that was known as Sarva Mangala Maya. And as long as you have this, you can never be hurt by anybody. You'd never be killed. So he instructed him to marry Tulsi. So Shankachuta went to Tulsi. And Tulsi tested Shankachuta, saying, you should not trust women. They're just not chaste. And Shankachuta responded by saying, that is only women in passion and ignorance. So in other words, women can be in different modes too. We have this discussion on the GVC now as far as women gurus. Because some people say that, you know, women have to be always in ignorance. That's their business. But actually, Prabhupada said the women are transcendental if they're taking up devotional service. So Lord Brahma Lord Brahma revealed to Shankachuta that his past was Sudam and Tulsi's past was in the spiritual world as a gopi. So Shankachuta reveals this to Tulsi too. So Brahma appears at this point, you know, Tulsi and Shankachuta having this whole discussion, you know, what should we do? Should we get married or not? And Brahma says, marry her now. By the Gandharva rite, that means exchanging garlands. And in the future, you will return to the spiritual world and get Krishna as your husband. So the couple gets married, and they enjoy. And Shankachuta enjoys his kingdom with Tulsi for 4,300,000 years. It's a long time. And he gets complete control of all the demigods. And so the demigods naturally go to Brahma. Brahma goes to Shiva. Then they go to Vaikuntha. And Lord Narayan explains everything. You know, this is what's supposed to happen, basically. And he explains that Sudam is actually Shankachuta. Shankachuta is Sudam. And he was cursed by Radharani. What happened is that Krishna was flirting with Viraja. And Radharani got very angry that, you know, why are you flirting with this girl? And Radha cursed her to become the river Viraja. And Radharani started yelling at Krishna, too. Krishna just very silently took it as a nice henpecked boyfriend. But Sudam couldn't stand that. So he chastised Radharani. He said, you know, why are you treating my friend like this? He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Just cool it. He can do anything he wants. And then Radharani got really angry at Sudam and cursed him to be born in the womb of a Danava, a demon. Sudam was crying, and Radharani, she said, why did I curse you? And she tried to stop the curse from taking effect, but Krishna explains that don't worry, in a half moment he's going to return to the spiritual world. Krishna's explaining all this to the demigods and to everybody because they went to Vaikuntha to hear what's happening. So then Narayan gave a trident to Lord Shiva to kill Shankachuta. He explains that I will take away this jewel of invulnerability disguised as a Brahmin, and later on I will violate the chastity of Tulsi. And then later, Tulsi will become my dearest wife. So then Shiva gets ready to attack Shankachuta. He sends an envoy, you know, like someone to challenge Shankachuta. And Shankachuta accepts the challenge. And then Lord Shiva is accompanied by Kartikeya, the Vasus, the Adityas, Indra, Agni, Vajrakali, who is on a chariot with red paraphernalia. Then Shankachuta informs Tulsi about the imminent battle. He preaches to her. She's all worried about it. And he tells her in the future they will be back with Radha and Krishna. Don't worry about it. They prepare for war. And also Shankachuta has a son, Suchandra, who helps out in this particular point. And there's 300,000 Akshahini forces who are fighting in this war. And they all came out to see Lord Shiva, who was in meditation, and they bowed to him. So this happened before the war. They had some etiquette before the war. Bhadrakali, also they bowed to her. And Lord Shiva blessed him. And Lord Shiva explained, again, he explains the past of Shankachuta. You are a Vaishnava. You should return. And but Shankachuta says to Lord Shiva, he should not favor the demigods. He accuses Lord Shiva of being not impartial. And then the war begins. And then the demigods get defeated. And then Kartikeya and Kali enter the battle. Kali, that's not Kali Yuga, that's, you know, it's Kali is an expansion of Durga, hurls all sorts of weapons at Shankachuta, but they just fall down. They fail because he's protected by this amulet. But Shankachuta does not fire any weapons at her because he respects her as the universal mother. And then she gets her trident ready, which nobody can defend against. But Kali is stopped by Lord Brahma's voice. And Lord Brahma says, you know, I've given this Shankachuta a boon, so you can't use this. So she desists. And in the meantime, you know, she's so angry, she decides, well, let me just do something. So she eats thousands of demons for prasadam. Yeah, it's described. This is the Puranas. I mean, don't blame me. And the only demons that survived were those that crawled out of her mouth while she was chewing. There were like 100,000 demons that were devoured at that point. Then Lord Shiva enters the battle. Shankachuta offers obeisances, and they fight for 1 year. Lord Shiva also grabs his trident, and then another heavenly voice tells Lord Shiva to stop. Reminds him of the boon and the amulet and the chastity of Tulsi. Don't violate this boon. Then Lord Shiva wants to see Lord Vishnu. Vishnu appears, and he says, all right, now it's time for me to help. And then he takes the form. First he takes the form of a very old brahmana, and he goes to Shankachuta. And Shankachuta, like Vedic demons, always gives things to brahmanas when they ask for something. Even, you know, Bali Maharaj, we have so many stories like that, where there's a lot of respect for Brahminical culture, even amongst the demons. So he begs for the amulet, he gets the amulet. Then he takes the form of Shankachuta and goes to Tulsi's palace, and he says, actually, Brahma mediated the whole thing, so the fight's over. So don't worry about it. And so, in other words, he has a relationship with Tulsi Devi at that particular point in the form of Shankachuta. Of course, she can sense what's happening at that time, and we get to that point. In the meantime, Lord Shiva fires his trident, Vijaya, that's 100 suns bright, 14,000 cubits long, 100 cubits wide at Shankachuta. Shankachuta sees it's coming. He goes in a yoga posture, meditates on Krishna's feet, and Shankachuta dies. There's a lot more to the story. It's an interesting story, isn't it? Most devotees have never heard all these points. And then his bones are tossed into the sea, and his bones become conscious, and the holy water in the conscious is sacred, like a sacred river. And these conscious are offered in, you know, blowing conches and water conches and stuff like that, offered to everyone except for Lord Shiva. That's why we use conch shells. Even though bones are considered impure generally, and, you know, even fish bones are considered impure, what to speak of chicken bones. So, people eat chickens and turkeys. So, but the conch shell, which is a bone of an animal, it's called an exoskeleton. That means an outside skeleton. There's an endoskeleton, which is what we have inside. There's an exoskeleton. So the conch is considered pure, and to touch it. And when conch is blown, it indicates Lakshmi is there. Lakshmi comes. Except when low-class people blow a conch, then Lakshmi becomes annoyed and goes somewhere else. So you have to really be, like, brahminically inclined. Like, if you're just like a malecha, like if you're... your mother blows a conch, not your mother, but anyway, if your mother blows a conch shell, then you lose all your money. So the conch indicates Hari and Lakshmi are there, and all inauspicious things disappear. And then Sudham regained his original form with the jewels and the flute and the chariot and the coward boys, and they all flew to Goloka. So he was there in Goloka, so he didn't get to see the cursing. So Radha and Krishna were very happy to have him back, and they took him on their laps. And then Tulsi figures out in the meantime, you know, she's having a relationship with Krishna, who's appeared in the form of Shankarachuda. She discovers the deception. She says, "Who are you?" She doesn't know it's Krishna yet. And she says, "I shall curse you." And then Krishna assumes an interesting form. You know, Lord Vishnu assumes a form. And Tulsi says, "You are like a stone." In other words, stone-hearted. A few moments later, she regains consciousness again and says, "Lord, you are like a stone. You are merciless. You violated my chastity by deception, and by this means you have killed my husband. You are merciless. Your heart is like a stone. Therefore, I curse you to become a stone. Those who call you holy are undoubtedly wrong. Your devotee committed no offense, and yet for the sake of others you killed him. Why?" And then Lord Narayan explains the whole thing, that you performed austerities to get me as your husband. Shankarachuda performed austerities to get you as his wife. And, you know, all these wishes were fulfilled. Now you will leave your earthly body and assume your spiritual body and be married to me. And you'll be like Lakshmi. Your body will become a famous river known as the Gandaki, a virtuous, pure, and transparent river in the holy land of India. Your hairs will be transformed into holy trees. In other words, the hairs of Tulsi are the Tulsi trees. Since the tree will be born of you, they will be known as Tulsi trees. All the residents of the three worlds will perform worship with the leaves and flowers of the tree. Thus you, Tulsi, will reign as the best amongst the trees and flowers. Nice. Here's the blessings Tulsi will bestow. Tulsi will grow in Goloka. It's described everywhere she grows. Of course, now by Prabhupada's mercy, Tulsi is growing all over the world. All the holy spots will converge and reside at the root of the Tulsi tree. And thus spiritual merits will accrue to all. All the demigods and I will wait there to gather the falling Tulsi leaves. Whoever will be moistened or anointed with the water that has been sanctified by Tulsi leaves will reap the benefits of having bathed in all the sacred rivers and performed all types of sacrifices. Lord Hari will not be as pleased with the gift of 1,000 jars of honey as with one Tulsi leaf. Offering one such leaf as a gift will bring the same reward obtained by offering millions of cows. You'll save some money. If one offers Tulsi leaves during the month of Kartik, he gets the same rewards as those mentioned. If at the time of death one drinks or gets the Tulsi leaf water, one will be freed of all sins and proceed to Vaikuntha. Whoever drinks the Tulsi leaf water daily will be redeemed in his lifetime and receive the benefit of a dip in the Ganges. Whoever plucks a Tulsi leaf, keeps it on his person, and then leaves his body in a holy place will go to Vishnu Loka. Anyone who worships me with this leaf daily will reap the blessings of 100,000 horse sacrifices. Anyone who leaves his body holding a Tulsi leaf in his hands will be saved from all sins. Anyone who wears a necklace composed of Tulsi wood will surely at every step get the reward of a horse sacrifice. Whoever breaks his promise while holding the Tulsi leaf will go to the Kala Sutra hell for as long as the sun and moon last. So if you ever have an investigation, you have someone hold a Tulsi leaf while you ask them a question whether they did something. Anyone who gives false evidence in the presence of a Tulsi leaf will go to the Kumbhi Paka hell for as long as the lifespan of 14 Indras. Whoever at the time of death drinks or gets a little Tulsi leaf water will certainly proceed to Vaikuntha, leaving in a jeweled airplane. Lord Hari will decapitate that person who on the day of the new moon or the full moon or on the 12th or the last day of the lunar month after having been anointed with oil just before taking a bath or at noon, daylight, daybright, sunlight or in a state of impurity or in one's nightdress will cull or pluck the Tulsi leaf. O chaste one, even if such a leaf is kept for 3 nights and becomes dry, it could still be employed in connection with funeral ceremonies, vows, gifts, consecration of temples, and worship of demigods. If Tulsi leaves that were offered to Lord Vishnu fall out on the ground or on water, then properly washed, they may be still used for other sacred purposes. You will always be the presiding deity of the Tulsi plant here on earth, and at the same time, you will always sport with Sri Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. You will also be the presiding deity of the Gandaki River and thereby shower India with religious merit. You will be further the wife of the ocean of salt, which is my partial expansion. O chaste goddess, you will always reside or remain personally by my side and enjoy my company as Lakshmi does. Then here's the blessings of Shalagram. As far as me, by your curse, I will become a stone and remain close to the bank of the Gandaki River. Millions of worms with their sharp teeth will make convolutions or rings in the stones there. They're called chakras, representing me. These will be known as shalagrams or sacred stones. So then there's a whole description, which I'm not going to read now, about the different types of shalagrams. You know, when they have two rings or three rings or this way or that way. And actually, there's some shalagrams that it's not auspicious to worship. So one has to be very, very expert. Nowadays, of course, you go on the eBay, and they're selling shalagrams. And most of the times, they're not actually shalagrams. Sometimes they're even plastic. We had one devotee who wanted to test the shalagram, and it melted because it was plastic. So first of all, you don't get a shalagram that way. You have to get permission from the spiritual master and get it from the spiritual master, not just any. Nowadays, I see that, you know, people go around because they can't worship the shalagram anymore. They say, oh, here's a shalagram for you. Krishna wanted me to give it to you because they can't worship it anymore. So that's not the way to get shalagram. Don't accept that if that happens. So there's a whole description here about the benefits and also the different types of shalagrams. Anyone who, while dying, drinks the shalagram Shila water will be freed from all sins and go to my company. It's very similar to the Tulsi benedictions. Where is this? If one does not offer Tulsi leaves in a conch, he remains without his wife for 7 births and becomes diseased. So then Tulsi, here's the end of the story. Tulsi returns to the spiritual world, but body became the Gandaki River, and Lord Hari became the mountain of the stones on the bank of that river. Here's more story. So then Lord Hari sported with Tulsi along with Lakshmi. Saraswati became very angry. She couldn't tolerate it. So it's interesting. There's all these stories about the ladies getting upset and envious, and even in the spiritual world. So Saraswati quarreled with Tulsi and hurt her, and Tulsi disappeared. Lord Hari appeased Saraswati and went to the Tulsi forest in Vrindavan, feeling great separation from her. He meditated on her in Vrindavan and chanted obeisances. This is Krishna doing this. Obeisances to Tulsi Devi, queen of Vrindavan forest, and then Krishna offered a ghee lamp, frankincense, and flowers and other offerings to her. That's interesting. Isn't Krishna doing Tulsi worship? And he said, anyone who does this will achieve complete perfection. Then Krishna began to praise her. And he said, the Tulsi trees collect in many groups. Thus the Pandits call it Vrinda. These are Krishna's words. I praise that dear Tulsi. Long ago she appeared in the Vrindavan forest and thus is known as Vrindavani. I adore that auspicious and glorious one. She is always worshipped in countless universes, and is also known as Vishwapujita, one who is worshipped throughout the world. I worship that Vishwapujita. Countless universes are made pure and holy by her contact. She is therefore called Vishwapavani, one who purifies the whole universe. Remembering her, I am suffering from separation from her. Though other flowers be heaped upon the demigods, they are not satisfied unless Tulsi is offered. Thus, she is considered the essence of all flowers and is called Pushpa-sara. Now I am anguished and troubled and very eager to see her, she who is purity incarnate. I crave the favor of that goddess. Remember, this is Krishna speaking. Because attainment of her brings faith and joy, she is called Nandini. Oh, may she be pleased with me. In the whole world, she is incomparable. Thus, she is called Tulsi. I take refuge of that dear Tulsi, very chaste and dear. She is the life of Krishna, and so is known as Krishna Jivani. There's another name of Tulsi. See all these different names of Tulsi. Oh, may this goddess save my life. After Lord Hari finished the ceremony and prayers, Tulsi was pleased. It's interesting. Krishna is worshiping Tulsi. Krishna was pleased and came out of the tree. She immediately took refuge at Lord Hari's lotus feet. He blessed her by saying, O Tulsi, you will be worshipped by all throughout the world, dearest. I will hold you on my head and in my heart, and all the demigods will hold you on their heads. When Lord Hari saw that the dignified Tulsi was weeping because of her feelings had been hurt by Saraswati, he clasped her to his breast, took her to Saraswati, and reconciled their differences. Then he blessed Tulsi, saying, you will be worshipped by all, honored by all, and respected by all, and all will carry you on their heads. I will also worship, honor, and respect you, and carry you on my head. Interesting. Tulsi was now very happy. Saraswati then embraced her and seated her by her side. Lakshmi and Ganga, smiling, also hugged her and then took her to their home. Interesting, isn't it? And here's some more benedictions about Tulsi. Whoever worships Tulsi Devi with her eight names and their meanings, Vrinda, Vrindavani, Vishvapavani, Vishvapujita, Tulsi, Pushpa, Sarat, Nandini, and Krishna Jivani, and properly sings this hymn of eight verses, acquires the merit of performing an Ashvamedha sacrifice. Because Tulsi was born on the lunar day of the full moon in the month of Kartik. That's actually her appearance day today, too. Lord Hari prescribed this day for her worship. Whoever worships her on this day will be freed from all sins and will go to Vaikuntha. So some of you missed Tulsi worship this morning. I'm sorry to hear that. So you have to stay here in the material world. So whoever, out of reverence, gives Lord Vishnu a Tulsi leaf in the month of Kartik will gain the same benefit obtained by giving the gift of 10 million cows. By hearing or recalling the Tulsi hymn, a son will be born to the sonless woman, a wife will be obtained by the wifeless man. Well, we don't want that one. Health will be restored to a diseased person. See? Freedom will be given to a prisoner, fearlessness will be bestowed upon the terrified, and salvation will be given to the sinners. In the Kanvasaka branch of the Vedas, the method of worshiping and meditating on Tulsi Devi is described. Without invoking the goddess, one can reverentially meditate on her and adore her with 16 ingredients in the following way. Of all flowers, Tulsi is the best. She is worshipable and beautiful and burns up the fuel of sins like the flame of fire. Of all the goddesses, she is the most sacred because no one can compare to her. She is called Tulsi. I worship this goddess who entreated by all, entreated. She is placed on the heads of all, desired by all, and makes the universe holy. She bestows liberation from this world and devotion to Lord Hari. I worship her. After this meditation and worship, the wise should raise her praise and bow down to her. So that's the story of Tulsi Devi. We finished it. That's pretty nice. Oh. Welcome back. So, anyway, so today is also the Rasa Leela. We're not going to get a chance to speak that much about the Rasa Leela, but this is the time when Krishna played his flute. I'm just to give a brief thing. Krishna played his flute, and then the gopis came, and then Krishna asked them, why have you come here? You know, just like he didn't know. What a rascal. And it was the night of the Sarat season, and it described the gopis dropped everything. They were cooking milk on the stoves. They stopped taking care of the cows, the babies, the husbands, and they dressed haphazardly to join Krishna. There were two types of gopis who went to join Krishna, the Nitya gopis, and meant eternal. And the other type was those being promoted to the stage of association with Krishna, like the sages of Danyakaranya. So, I guess we got to agree the deities win. I guess. Oh, yeah, and actually it's chaste. They're chaste because, first of all, Krishna Parikshit Maharaj asked the question, why is this hearing about this Parikya Ras with Krishna purifying? And the answer Shukadeva Goswami gave was, first of all, Krishna associated with the gopis in spiritual bodies. not material bodies. And the husbands, the so-called husbands, own the physical body, but Krishna owns the soul. That's an interesting explanation. That's an explanation why it's not illicit. And another explanation is that actually Krishna is the husband of everybody. And Krishna does own everybody, even the body. And Krishna said to the first, why have you come here? Sit down. It's very dangerous. Go back. You're very nice, thin-waisted girls. You have responsibilities to your family. Go back. I congratulated them and gave them instructions about chastity to their husband. Just remember me, he said, and everything will be okay. Go home. The gopis cried and were scratching the ground with their little toenails. You are cruel. We have taken shelter. You are the ultimate husband. We're not going to go back. So then Krishna embraced them, and they all walked along the Jamuna, and there's all sorts of loving exchanges, the pinching and etc. And then the gopis got proud. Krishna disappeared, and they began to ask the trees and look around for Krishna, and saw that Krishna had left with Radharani. But even Radharani got proud, and Krishna left Radharani. So first they saw two sets of footprints, and then one set when Krishna picked up Radharani. But then when they saw Radharani had been left alone, because Radharani was thinking she's the most fortunate, which she is. But Krishna was just trying to increase this mood of separation. They became sympathetic to Radharani, and they began to chant, longing for Krishna. And Krishna again appeared, and they all walked along the banks of the Jamuna, over 16,000 gopis. And this is interesting. Gopis asked Krishna, which of the three classes of men are best? He who only receives, he who gives up always, or he is neutral. Krishna replied, the best is the second class, he who gives always. The third class, and then he went to a whole explanation of everything. I'm not going to have time, because now it's time to greet the deities. Okay, it's a very auspicious day. It's the last day in the month of Kartik, and last day to worship Damodar. So we'll be doing that in a second. All glories to His divine grace. Shri Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Go for it,